and Kali Randaloo piano. I'm Melissa Owsley. Thanks for listening today.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UAP reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO, UAP, and abduction phenomenon.
Bill Murphy has a BA and MA from Michigan State University and did further postgraduate work in ancient history at the University of Michigan. He taught world civilizations college courses and worked full-time in the automotive industry as a quality practitioner, teacher, trainer, and facilitator. He retired from General Motors as a senior data analyst and associate dean of its quality college. Bill held certifications from the American Society for Quality as a quality engineer and manager of quality organizational excellence. He served the Mutual UFO Network in the 1990s as a field investigator, newsletter editor, and state section co-director, retiring as a Michigan State co-director in 1997. In 2007, Bill joined the board of the J. Allen Hynek Center for UFO Studies. In 2016, he retired from business, joined Anomalous.com, and now serves as its news editor. There, he's reviewed over 10,000 online articles, blog items, book reviews, and academic papers in ufology and archaeology. Bill now lives in Colorado Springs, Colorado, with his wife, Linda, a PhD in electrical and computer engineering. And I'm proud to say that Bill has been a personal friend of mine for many years. So welcome to the show, Bill.
Hi, David. It's great to see you again.
Good seeing you. With all your impressive background in academia, what made you choose the UFO paranormal route?
Well, I think in the 60s, I was quite interested in space and then UFOs. I did read Eric von Däniken's great fun book, and also Captain Ed Ruppelt's book on his time in Project Blue Book. And I think it would have been in 67. I actually went, I think, down to Hillsdale College, but I saw Dr. Hynek give a presentation. And all of this stuff kind of got me quite interested in the subject, but I was doing all that other stuff, you know, that you talked about, and learning a lot about other things, research in academia, but then also research in automotive, in the business world. And I had a kid, well, actually he was an adult, he was a X-Files cop at Mason, Michigan, who took one of my college courses. And he told me about this organization, and I think we talked about this back in 2016. I thought he called it Muffin, and that kind of was a little bit weird. But he said they studied unidentified flying objects. Yeah. And actually, in my classes, I was doing a little thing at the end of the term just to talk about that subject. It's a very interesting scientific proposition. So anyway, long story short, after about a year, my wife and I got enough courage to go to one of these Muffin meetings. Mm-hmm. And we found it was the Mutual UFO Network. And the topic was pretty out there, literally. But the people were quite grounded. And that impressed me. And so we got in the early 90s, basically immersed in that subject, and ended up, you know, with tremendous team of people in 97, and Dr. David Toth spearheading that, doing the international convention in Grand Rapids, after which we retired from that to go back. Linda was working on her advanced degrees, and I wanted to get those quality certifications. So we took a little hiatus, and we also then in this process gradually linked up with the Center for UFO Studies. Dr. Michael Swords was the first person we had when we did our first MUFON state meeting. And so we had an association from then on. And then fortunately, in 2016, when I retired from my final job, which was a plastics plant in Livonia, I got the opportunity to work with the Anomalist. And since then, you know, we talked in 2016, I remember saying, you know, it's really exciting. It's a great job, best one I've ever had. And I looked after I listened to our conversation last night from 8 years ago, and this was 2016, and I looked at all the UFO stuff that I was writing at that time. It was old news. It wasn't anything that was really exciting in the UFOs and government situation. Mm-hmm. And wow, has things changed?
I guess. Since. Yeah. So, tell our listeners about the online magazine Anomalous.com.
Well, that's what I really want to talk a lot about. It's a free kind of thing. I mean, you just get online, and every weekday now we discuss, review those articles and academic papers and, just plain news. Mm-hmm. About a variety of subjects. I do the UFOs and archaeology. We have people that do cryptids. We have a new guy that focuses on the ET. We have Psi in general. It is a very wide-ranging sort of information, anomalous.com. And by the way, if people are interested in anything further on this, or if I forget about something and then I say, oh, gee, you know, I wish I had more information on that, I have basically an archive of the articles that I've done and some of the other folks have done, and can go back and look for information. And I think that the murphybillufo@gmail.com address would work on that. That's murphybillufo@gmail.com. And I can look stuff up for people.
Murphy Bill is all one word?
Yeah, murphybillufo@gmail.com.
Okay, good.
So that's just a thing to mention. I right now have about 200 or was it 345 pages of the stuff I've done that I can look up online for the last year and a half. It's a tremendous change has occurred. Almost every week there's something new. Even this morning, I just realized, looked it up, there was a lot of news about this new task force that's going to look into not only the UFO subject, but a lot of other areas of great interest, I think, to people. And it's just one almost broadside of news after another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the most recent congressional hearing on UAP, the term Immaculate Constellation came up.
Yeah.
They acted like that was a taboo subject. Can you tell us about the term Immaculate Constellation?
Well, that's a very interesting one. There's a gentleman that came forth with that particular story, and it seems to have more legs than just what he got. I have to look up the name on that. I think it was a Michael. There were four witnesses at that November the 13th hearing. I did cover that quite well. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of an odd thing because and most of the information I get, of course, is from these people that I, whose articles I get, and I try to give all of the different variations on that. There's a real battle about whether Immaculate Constellation is really the name of a program that was secret and that looked into the UFO subject in a very, very strong way and had uncovered a lot of, archival material was out there. If, as with so many of these other things that come up, like Jake Barber's most recent proclamations, if this is true, it just blows the lid off what we really have recognized the last 80 years is, if not a conspiracy, it's certainly a tamping down of information. A lot of that's understandable because most of this has had the military tinge to it, and methods and sources, and maybe even some of what we know about perhaps ET or non-human intelligence is better if we don't give the whole story to the rest of the world. But there is really something there, and whether Immaculate Constellation and its stories about, I think there's a lot of pictures in that. If that's real or if it's partly real, it's just another indication. But as you and I well know, we've worked on cases for decades, and those are solid cases. We talked last time about Kinross. And, you know, we can talk about 94 in Holland and Grand Haven. And frankly, I looked at my list of, I think I got it somewhere around here, 10 or 12 best cases. And I don't even have some of those. I have things like Levelland. And of course, now since 2017, FLIR 1 and the Nimitz 2004 incident, we have very solid cases. Now, the new Aero director seems to recognize that. And he's told people that, my goodness, there's stuff that even I as a physicist, and I don't know anybody else in my area, can explain. So, you know, there's been this governmental admission. I think the June 25th, 2021 preliminary assessment by the ODNI was absolutely seminal, critical in reversing the public governmental stance. And 2017 and the Politico and New York Times articles, the 2021 preliminary
animals
assessment, and then,
US
of course,
shelters,
David Grush's
especially dogs
testimony,
who look a certain way,
which in some ways was not that new. You and I well know, and I think the listeners know, there have been for a long time people coming forward and saying they knew something about programs to search for, recover, and study. Well, it would have been extraterrestrial. Now it's non-human intelligence stuff. And it's just that now the Congress in particular has taken a real interest in this. And for goodness sakes, Dave, especially in these times right now, a bipartisan interest in unraveling this dilemma and opening up more information to the public. This, you know, has brought together Schumer and Rubio and Mace and Moskowitz, all of these people, and particularly with the House of Representatives, those people only have 2 years at a time before they come again to ask the American people to help them serve. They're putting a lot of their stake in this. Mm-hmm. And that is such a brave thing, I think.
Yes.
So there's a lot of positives going on.
They seem to be sticking their necks out, so to speak, politically and professionally, just to say, hey, these things are real.
And yeah, and Tim Burchett. Tim Burchett, my kind of maybe the guy I, or person I most admire in this, even had his own party run, I guess, somebody against him in the primary. I guess it was this, because he was pretty straight, you know, down the road in that particular area. But they apparently were touting somebody else against him in his primary. The courage that some of these people are showing gives you some hope.
Right. I have to take a moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm your host, David Twitchell, and we're speaking with Mr. Bill Murphy. Was with MUFON and now is with anomalous.com. The anomalous.com's got quite a few articles constantly about paranormal in general, correct, Bill?
Absolutely. And I think I'm probably going to be writing something up for tomorrow on this governmental task force that was just announced. We talked about some of the heroes on that. And of course, Moskowitz and Schumer are Democrats. But there's, I think we've got Anna Paulina Luna, Linda Mace, Eric Burleson, Ann Burchett are on this committee to investigate the JFK, MLK Jr., and RFK assassinations and so forth. And it's And, you know, maybe we'll get something out of that.
Maybe we can hope. Huh?
We definitely can hope. There's nothing that's absolutely certain, except my cat is excited about all of this too, and telling us all about that. Sorry, folks, on that. He's an old cat, but he's put up with me for 18 years now.
I really can't hear him.
Good.
So if you hear a meow in the background, folks, that's his cat. So yeah. Get off the phone.
Yeah.
I want a treat.
Yeah. So,
whistleblowers David Grush and Jacob Barber, who really hasn't come forward yet to the congressional hearings. What do you think about those two as their authenticity? Are they good witnesses?
Well, I think David Grush is an absolute star witness. Now, whether what he's telling us is completely correct or not, or he's been getting some funny information during his period in office with the UAPTF and elsewhere. I think the guy is solid. And I'm not completely full on Barber yet. That's going to take some time for me to figure it out. And it's doing that in my sources. And, of course, I have to go through that because there's so many other things going on. But I think, in fact, I think it may be in today. Today's anomalous guy by the name of Dr. Joseph Felser is very impressed with Barber. Now, of course, there's a money-making angle in this. It's yet to be figured out whether he will testify or not. But Barber does want to testify, we understand. And what he has saying has been seconded by others who are in or were in some of the groups that he worked on with, apparently retrieving NHI or eight guns and eggs and stuff like that. Joseph Felser, has a great article on why he believes Barber, and it's partly because Felser's had his own experiences, and in particular the consciousness angle. Consciousness is something I don't think was very big with UFOs back in 2016 or 2017, but it's come to the fore more and more. And we all know that within ufology, there's a lot of different groups. I really grew up in the nuts and bolts kind of area, but as I've learned more, I think that there is much more to it. I think consciousness may be somewhat involved. There are, of course, religious implications. The whole thing is extremely fascinating. Mm-hmm. But it's nuts and bolts alone, I think, fails to grasp the totality of the problem or probability or maybe even opportunity that UFOs present.
Yeah, I've often said on the show that MUFON, way back when, it didn't want to deal with abduction or aliens. It was all nuts and bolts UFOs, flying saucers,
right,
what have you. But, yep, you know, it made no sense because if they're up there, somebody's got to be driving.
That was what Dr. Hynek basically said. We know that NICAP was kind of off on this whole thing about the pilots. And Hynek admitted that at first he was he'd rather just talk about the craft than who was up there driving them. Now, of course, AI has been suggested besides biologics as a possibility. And Sean Kirkpatrick and Avi Loeb even collaborated on a paper, which actually borrowed some stuff from other previous scholars about aliens coming into this solar system via mechanical devices, replicatable, self-replicatable mechanical devices, and perhaps even like from a mothership that would send out some of these probes. And again, it was all AI. So there's now this artificial intelligence component that's working here. So it's fascinating, but you're absolutely right. It was one thing to talk about even objects floating around in the sky or buzzing around in the sky.
Right.
And I think part of it was they do things that we just can't believe, at least corporeal being like ourselves could survive. And even our craft, our aircraft couldn't survive G-forces from all of these sharp turns and tremendous accelerations.
Well, it's been theorized that these craft are actually in a different, shall we say, time zone. And when we look at them and see them make these sharp right-hand turns and zip off at thousands of miles an hour, they're really, in, like I say, in their own time zone. And we are the ones that are so slow, you know?
Yeah, and that's a thing that I've recently gotten, you know, rather interested in, and you put it exactly correctly. It's we are trying to fit, we'll call it alien physics, into our own narrow confines. And if you get into quantum physics, I think that the book has yet to be written on that, the little I understand about that. I mean, I'm a dumb ancient historian, and I just made cars for a living, and we're talking about stuff that's really, literally, way out there. But it does, I think, speak to the issue that there is more to UFOs than just the mechanical component, aside from the notion that there must be somebody driving them. And so as an historian, I find UFOs and what they are is one very important thing, but the human element, how they're affecting us or we're interacting them with them, that is equally important, because after all, it's us folks that have to contend with this mystery.
Well, I think that quantum physics has replaced old-time physics. But it's based on old-time physics, isn't it? Quantum physics.
That's, you know, the little I understand about it. And it's just another development in the evolution of science. And what you see in that, as in UFOs in particular, is there's a traditional hold on progress to a certain extent. You see it in archaeology, traditional views in archaeology. They're being attacked all over the place, especially by scientific techniques, genetics, and some of these, well, even just ground probing, radar, LIDAR, and things like that. It's really upending what we thought we knew about archaeology. And the same thing's occurring in ufology. And not only traditional scientists that Avi Loeb has to beat on, but even traditional ufologists to a certain extent have to get a little more malleable, a little more open to some of these possibilities. Because again, and I'm not knocking traditional ufology, because you know it took a long time for archaeology to get from just digging stuff up, and for astrology to turn into astronomy, and things like that. And we're really only 80 years into the modern UFO era, but we do have to loosen up, and we do have to understand, literally expand our horizons to encompass what UFOs might constitute. And you'll note I keep calling them UFOs because, well, heck, you know, I grew up with that. Yeah. And if we call them UAP, well, my Latin background has problems because we get UAP phenomenons. Nobody quite gets it in the way I think the Latin would want it to be. And also, if it were the Center for UAP Studies, it would be CUAPS and not CUFOS. And I can handle CUFOS. CUAPS is just a little too much for me.
Yeah, you were an officer for both Michigan MUFON and after that J.L.N. Hynek's CUFOS, as you just mentioned. Is there much difference between those two organizations?
Well, there's a couple fundamental differences. One is that MUFON is a membership organization, and CUFOS has until recently simply just mostly been a board and occasionally people that would work with them fairly closely. Ted Phillip, Trace Cases, the absolute master of that, the late Ted Phillips, I should say. CUFOS has prided itself in doing some fairly intense investigations in some cases, Roswell with Schmidt and Randall would be one example, publishing basically, well, the International UFO Reporter, I wrote a few articles for that. We closed that down because the a lot of these organizations closed down those kinds of things because of the internet taking over. We still have some of the physical paper copies. But I think the big thing is that there's a real control there was over the board membership, and really emphasize the scientific approach we feel that we do, and more now of a consulting kind of thing. Whereas MUFON is in many ways the gateway, as it was for me, to the subject for people all over the world. Mm-hmm. And as a very important component in the field investigators. It's just not anything that I know of that can compare to that in terms of the number of people and the attempts to make their investigations rigorous enough to be useful. So they have this wide focus. They do offer a lot of conferences, and you know, you can buy MUFON t-shirts. They don't have any CUFOS t-shirts and stuff like that, but they're making the effort to literally spread the information out to the general public. CUFOS does, well, Jerry Clark wrote the UFO Encyclopedia, Dave Marler, the Triangular UFOs Estimate of the Situation. But through our website, CUFOS has a tremendous amount now of free information that people can tap into. Really emphasize its UFO timeline, because if you're interested in something, and George Eberhardt, who runs that, has a 2024 year in review out there, but he's also got this timeline, goes back to 743, 744, 745 AD. We're not sure on the exact date of UFO cases. And what George has done is you get a summary of each of those cases in understandable terms. And then you also get where you can get more information, not only from the books that were important and maybe articles, but in a lot of cases now, well, thousands of cases, the timeline back to 743 is, I don't know now, it changes weekly, about 1,500 pages. It links. You can pop right there and go to an article on Norwood, Ohio, or Roswell, or whatever that George has got up there. So it's great for an individual that has an interest in one particular area or era or event to look at that. We also have the IUR, International UFO Reporter, available free. We have other articles free. We have, I think, the Journal of UFO Studies, which was this academic level, rather in a sense, peer-reviewed publication, and people can get into that. So you can cruise through that website. You can learn about the board. You can learn about the people we have as consultants and friends, and that's a worldwide group. And there's other UFO groups like that. Dave Marler has his own National UFO Historical Records Center down in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. And Marler has done something I don't think anybody has done before. He has partnered with a public school to use his archives as a teaching mechanism for critical thinking. He doesn't say UFOs are real. He doesn't say they're ET. He doesn't say they're, you know, just woo, as we sometimes call it. But he gives people some of the cases, and then they talk about how they're investigated. And the idea is to develop students who will, in later life, be able to use critical thinking, how to evaluate information, how to look for bias, how to make your own decisions. That groundbreaking thing, I think, is the first of its kind in the world.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I want to take one more moment just to remind our listeners, you're listening to WHFR.FM, Making Waves. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm your host, David Twitchell, and we're speaking with Mr. Bill Murphy. He's the editor for theanomalous.com, excellent online magazine to catch up on what's going on in the world of UFOs and paranormal in general. So, Bill, another hot topic in the news lately are those so-called drones on the East Coast, and in fact, all over the country. If these are truly earthly drones, hobbyist or otherwise, why aren't we able to identify them and take them down? Or are they
very
not?
Good. Very good question. And I'm glad you brought drones up, because I think one of the things that's made UFOs more of a mainstream subject is things like the Starlink satellites, things like, obviously, this drone controversy. There's what I call Balloon Gate a couple of Februaries back.
Were you saying,
I think
there's the balloons?
No. Oh. I'm just saying that whenever one of these sensations hits, because this 2017 on has been a UFO renaissance without a wave, essentially, of current sightings. Mm-hmm. 2017, we're talking about 2004. And then gradually some later stuff came up, 14 and 15. But it wasn't like all of a sudden people started seeing UFOs. And my wife did a paper with two other PhDs. It's in the Society for Scientific Exploration Archives. Mm-hmm. On the COVID and the rise in UFO reports. And they found that the rise wasn't really a rise at all. They were able to take National UFO Historical Records, National UFO Reporting Center records, I should say, Peter Davenport's organization, and go through a process to weed out what were obvious starlinks after that project started spewing satellites all over the place. And they found that actually the numbers of what you could say were more problematic reports, they weren't obviously Starlinks, declined in the early period of COVID. People now in the academic world are taking these things on and studying facets of the UFOs, and that's going to be a bonus for us. But with the drone situation, this is a particularly interesting example, because as I've argued, I think maybe I argued today in the Anomalous, whether they're UAP or drones, if you're landing an airplane and one of these things buzzes you, you need to know what you can do. You need to know, have some identification of what's going on. And if they are drones, there's things we know we can do about it. I think, and it's just, again, it's just a Murphy guess, that there's more to some of these drones than the government is letting on.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe even knows, even more than it knows. And I didn't see much of an improvement in this administration over the last one's extreme reticence to admit what's going on. Maybe things will change. But, we got this bland assurance, well, the FAA has approved all those New Jersey drones. It doesn't square with what people on the ground think. And that's not a political or a particular administration kind of thing. Again, there is, I think, a reticence upon the people that have purview, power, or responsibility to the general public. Reticence to admit they don't have full control. Alexander Wendt and Raymond Duval wrote a paper on sovereignty in the UFO. And it's you just can't imagine where government would come forward and say, look, there's a lot of weird stuff going on in our skies. We don't know what it is. We don't know where it comes from. It can do stuff we can't do. Have a nice day.
Yeah.
But I think most of the drones are real drones. I do think there's a coordination. We've seen that particularly in Europe. But there are a lot of drone reports that don't seem to make it to the news now, at least mainstream news.
Well, the latest MUFON journal just had an article about these drones and quote unquote drones, I should say, because some of them, huge long one was about 100 feet long. Have you ever seen a drone that's 100 feet long and go from zero to 1,000 miles an hour, 4,000 miles an hour, and zip back and forth and make 90 degree turns? They do the same thing that UFOs / UAPs throughout history, throughout the recent history, have been doing, and yet they call them drones.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's drones is a, let's say, a very widely applicable term. And, it's almost as bad as UFO or UAP. We really have no, in some of these cases, David, we have no completely accurate language to describe this. I know that the native, the Inuit in Alaska and Yukon have like 40 different words for snow. And they all have different legitimate meanings. We lack, I think, the vocabulary to talk adequately about this whole subject. But the drone thing is, and again, banning administrations going back decades and decades. The government has been extremely reticent to admit, I think, even what they know. But at the end, I'm not sure they know exactly what there is out there.
They
don't. And you don't want to admit that.
But the word drone is so familiar to the basic public that, they're drones. That's what's making all the, that's what you see in the air, making all these zipping around 90 degree turns and taking off at thousands of miles an hour. Those are drones. So, just all is well, nothing to see here, go back to sleep.
Exactly. Move along, folks. Everything's taken care of.
Sleep well tonight. Your Air Force is awake. Remember that thing?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's, you know, again, and you have to, just like with the whole term UAP, it means different things, or even to the Air Force, to the government, to the military, unidentified is you don't know what it is right now. You've got something flying towards Cleveland, and it's doing really weird things, and you need to know, because now maybe if you live in Detroit, you're not crazy about Cleveland, the mistake on the lake, and all that. But there are nice people there. There's a great art museum and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. We need to know that. Now, to us with a UFO, it's something, particularly with Hynek's definition, it's something that you've gotten a lot of good experts after the fact to look at with all their different, you know, gizmos and stuff like that. You still can't figure it out. Right. And that's a great definition, but it doesn't work for the military when you have to have this kind of snap decision stuff. So I think there's still a lot of confusion, even within the UFO field and among the general public, as to what's all going on. But like you say, when you got stuff that can make right-angled turns that would turn someone into jelly, mm-hmm. or beyond, probably, you have to ask yourself, what am I going to call this? And if you don't call it drone, you're calling it unidentified. And if you're calling it unidentified, that's at least the potential safety and security risk about which you don't know anything, or you don't know enough to be able to mitigate or ameliorate it.
Well, even the term drones is a safety hazard up there. Don't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Whatever it is, to properly cope with it, mm-hmm. we need to know what its basically origin is. If it's a license plate made in Detroit or Alpha Centauri.
I think probably the latter is true.
On the side, just, you know, when you talk religion or science or whatever, all the exoplanets, it's just ridiculous to assume there can't be life out there somewhere. Big question is, has there been life here that we don't know about, as well as outside, and is it affecting us? And Aimé Michel, a French ufologist, once, I think, talked about, you know, we're like ants, and we're trying to cope with, what was that big thing that came down and crushed our colony? Fortunately, our colonies haven't been crushed, but we probably, like I said, don't have the language, and maybe not yet the comprehension to deal with this, but we're getting there, I think. I think that we are making some progress.
Maybe the problem is that we're crushing our own colony, and someone someplace is saying, hey, knock it off.
That's been something that we've heard from contactees, and we're hearing from abductees, and yeah, frankly, makes sense.
Yeah. So one of the anomalous articles that caught my eye was that of a Kentucky women who shared
the three
abduction encounter back in 76. Will you share that case with us?
Well, basically, this was one of the, I think, stronger cases. Three women, let's see if I can remember this right. I think they were celebrating one of their birthdays, and somehow, I think in the process and this is kind of getting back into my memory a little bit, it's a little folly with the COVID that I've had, they had some kind of an experience, and one is still left alive. The other two have passed, but they did have some kind of an unusual experience. They are very upstanding people. I think they were, I'm not sure whether they were, all of them were hypnotized or not. But the end result was that this was considered a very solid case. Cash Landrum, in its own way, was a solid case of the two women and the boy. And it's just one of those things that there was some kind of an experience. And
what happened?
How much? Well, I think they were abducted.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they all three were abducted. And I think, yeah, this is one that I'd have to look up again. Because, again, it gets lost in all these others.
Right.
But it is a solid case. Of course, Betty and Barney Hill is a pretty solid case. You know, that was researched very well, but there's been some recent poo-pooing books on that subject.
Oh, always.
Yeah.
So with all your expertise, can I assume that there'll be a book in the offing?
Well, I don't know, Dave.
I'm putting you on the spot, eh?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, you know, we've had our own. I've had my own kind of weird experiences too. But it's such a huge topic. You know, it's there's so many elements to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to do it. Maybe things will even out here. But you know, as long as there's all this kind of stuff going on, I'll let John Greenwald, I'll let the debrief, I'll let Billy Cox, I'll even let Jason Colavito and all these other people out there tell me what they think about it. And it changes. And I found that as I said, I was strictly nuts and bolts. I'm seeing there's more elements to it.
Mm-hmm.
If I can, maybe someday I'll do that. But in the meantime, I do, you know, I'm honored to serve Michigan in doing the periodic updates on the news. Two other states, I do that. I am thinking of maybe trying to do something every month, but right now I don't have time for much of an online presence. But it's just so fascinating. I've got other things I want to do before I pass. Got 4,000 butterflies to work on and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But there is nothing like this subject to animate me, to challenge me. Philosophy, psychology, natural science, statistics to some extent, and get to use some of my research background. Even getting into this, folks, if you read something about something that occurs in Argentina or something, and they start talking about the natural wonders of the area, you can get off and do a geographical trip through the internet to learn more about this world. One last thing on that. We get a lot of people say, why would somebody want to come here? Out of all the other stars and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, the Earth is a very interesting place, although we're messing it up in a lot of ways. This is a beautiful country. This is a beautiful world, full of beautiful countries. And you learn more about life when you learn about this. It's a door to a greater universe.
Right. So, yeah, have you had your own personal UFO or alien experience?
I can't say that I have. I've had some really weird things happen that have been interpreted. But I was privy to something. Try to be as brief as I can on this, but I was just learned how to drive. My parents and brother and I were driving up to Lansing from a trip, and something swung out of the sky as I was driving and swung back into it a couple times.
Hmm.
I was driving. I didn't see it. My parents described it like the planet Jupiter. A lot of rows, a lot of actually like sections and rows of windows. called the National Weather Service in Lansing. Oh, it's probably a cold air funnel and all that kind of stuff. But it scared my father. Said he didn't believe in UFOs, but he'd seen them. So that was one case. Okay, so I didn't see it. Everybody else in the car did.
Mm.
Then my family took a trip later on from Lansing up north, and they saw a huge UFO rise out of a field next to them. But it's a standard, disc-like UFO, all that kind of stuff. And then a third event occurred when my parents were driving up to their cottage at Crooked Lake, and my wife and I were there waiting for them. They got there 30 minutes late because they'd seen something off to the east that was really weird. And it was like two or three huge sticks with windows on them and some really weird stuff going on. Just like the first case, really weird looking, unusual UFO. They actually got off of 27 or whatever it was and went to see these things. And then they got scared and turned around. And apparently some of these things were coming after them. Long story short, they got to the cottage 30 minutes late. And I don't think there was missing time, but they were just shook.
Mm.
Well, I never saw any of this stuff. Years later, I was working in General Motors at Youngstown, Ohio, went to a used bookstore for 2 or 3 months. I was interested in this one book, Stone Circles of the British Isles, archaeology book. Didn't buy it. It was $20. That was quite a bit. But the last time I was there, because I was being brought back to Michigan, I bought the book. And I think just before I got it, I opened it up, and I think it was on page 100 or 110. There was one sheet of paper, and it had drawings of the first UFO that all I know is my family saw, and the third case of the multiple UFOs, very distinctive cases. It was in that book in a sheet of paper someone had put in.
Yeah.
Jerome Clark said that was the weirdest thing he'd ever heard.
Yeah, it's amazing when you have an experience, like you, like me, I have an experience, and then you start investigating that particular phenomenon, and you find, there's other people who have had the same experience, that they've seen the same thing.
Yes.
They've seen something coming out of a vortex or a wormhole. It's like my family did. And so you say that your family members took a detour, and that would account for the 30 minutes late.
We think so. Yeah. I don't think there was any abduction scenario. But the whole thing was that it was, and like my father said, he didn't believe in UFOs, but he'd seen them. And he was comfortable with that. Now, we very well know people whose lives have been changed.
Yeah.
We've worked with people whose lives have been changed.
Sure.
Again, the human component of this is not only fascinating, but it's critically important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that reminds me of a story George Filer tells about this guy. He was a pilot, and he had a colonel in the military. He had a colonel in the back, but the pilot was flying the plane, and this UFO came up on the side, and when it disappeared, he went back to him and said, "Sir, did you see that?" He says, "Yes, it was a UFO, but I didn't look at it because I don't believe in those things." That's what your story reminded me of. I didn't look at it because I don't believe in those things.
My dad was open. He was comfortable with that. And, he went about his life. But again, I did go back to a case where I was out with my dad, and we were investigating a kind of a swampy area, and I had this thing where I turned around and I saw this Golden Garden spider that was 3 feet long. And the next thing I remember, my dad was yelling for me. I was then hypnotized by one of the previous MUFON state directors and did uncover a scenario where I did go into a craft.
Wow.
Now, I worry about hypnosis. I have no idea if that was true. But it certainly is one of those cases. And I just read something yesterday where a woman says, hey, you know, everybody has these things in life where there's things you can't explain.
Right. It's one of those things.
Well, Bill, and hey, that's what makes life interesting.
Yeah. Bill Murphy, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but I bet you have a whole bunch of stuff to tell us. So
yeah,
have you back again, okay?
I much appreciate it, David, and thank you again for the opportunity.
And I want to thank you, the loyal listener. Go to WHFR's homepage, scroll down to We Are Not Alone, and click on the headline, which will take you to where you can find my website with all the archive shows. Or click on the Talk Shows button, then the We Are Not Alone button for the latest show archives. And please join me the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UAP phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
Guys and dolls, you are at the malt shop with Daddy G here in WHFR, and we are going back to the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice in the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the malt shop, where the jukebox is playing, the kids are dancing, and here we are, back in the 50s.
When true lovers meet in Mayfair, so the legends tell. Songbirds sing, winter turns to spring. Every winding street in Mayfair falls beneath the spell. I know such enchantment can be, 'cause it happened one evening to me.